back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Michael Zeldin's all over your television, and for good reason. An expert on sanctions and money laundering and terrorist financing. He knows white-collar crime, and he knows what he's talking about in relation in particular to Robert Mueller, who he worked with on a close level and knows well. And Mr. Zeldin, I'm a fan. I appreciate the work you do every day on television.
Well, thank you very much. You and my mom both know.
Yeah, well, your mom called and told me to say that.
Oh, she paid you.
And I know you know our friend Pat Brady, who says hello.
I do. He's a good guy.
He is a good man. Big surprises yesterday for the rest of us. Did the move surprise you?
Well, are you talking about the Cubs being snowed out, or
Yes, well, we were fairly surprised by that. I'm referring more to the Cohen raid.
All right, we'll stick to Cohen then. Yes, I was not anticipating this. I don't know that anyone was. Maybe Cohen was. I'm told the president was given a heads up that it was going to happen during the course of the day. But, I mean, the one thing that's true about this investigation, as opposed to other investigations that I've covered, either as a lawyer or as a commentator, was that there aren't many leaks coming out of law enforcement, and so it was a surprise for sure, yes.
And in that surprise, we need to make sure that folks understand the clarity of what we do know, and that is that Mr. Mueller appeared to have found something that he believed was problematic, that didn't fall under the general purview of his investigation, that he takes to the Justice Department. They agree. They ask a judge for a warrant. The warrant's granted. The Justice Department asks the FBI to act. Are those the steps?
Yes, I think so, although it's early in the reporting, so there are a couple of things that are unknowns to me. One is, what's the scope of the inquiry? Does it relate to Cohen and Stormy Daniels, Cohen as a lawyer for the Trump Organization, Cohen as fixer for President Trump personally? We don't know what the scope of the search was. There's, you know, talk that it may involve bank fraud and wire fraud and other activity related to Cohen in his practice as an attorney. So that's the first thing. We don't know what it's about. But we do seem to know, and we don't know whether it pre-exists Mueller, and that Mueller came across something additional that the Southern District of New York was already onto, and that was the you know, proverbial last straw. But assuming the reporting, which is Mueller is doing his investigation. In the course of his investigation, he comes across something that's unknown to anybody. He then sees what this unknown thing is, and it looks to him as potentially criminal. Under his mandate, the law that governs his behavior, there's a Code of Federal Regulation 600.4B, if anyone wants to look it up. And what it says is that Mueller is to go to the Attorney General, in this case Rosenstein, we think, because remember, if it's untethered to the Russia investigation, then theoretically the Attorney General Sessions could have been involved in this because he's not recused from things disconnected to Mueller. But again, let's assume Mueller comes across something in the course of his investigation that he has to take under the regulations to Rosenstein, acting AG.
Uh-huh.
And he says to Rosenstein, I have come, a matter has come to light in the course of my investigation, which potentially is criminal. Under the regulations, I have to come to you now and say, what do you want to do? Do you want me to keep it, or are you going to sign it?
That makes sense.
It's an important distinction.
Yep. And then, so, what we understand is that he went there and he said, do you want me to keep it, or do you want to sign it elsewhere? He said, thank you very much. This is disconnected to your investigation, notwithstanding the fact that you may have found the initial inquiry evidence.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take it from here. And he assigned it to Jeff Berman. Now, Jeff Berman is the interim United States attorney appointed by Jeff Sessions to fill the slot of the Southern District of New York U.S. Attorney's Office. So Manhattan is Southern District of New York. So Rosenstein goes to Berman and says, this is all yours. Berman, because this involves a lawyer, has to get approval for any sort of search at the highest levels, not only within his office, meaning himself, but at the FBI and at the Justice Department. So my expectation is that the people who conferred to determine whether they should go forward with this search of an attorney's office were Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, Jeff Berman, the interim U.S. attorney appointed by Jeff Sessions, the fellow whose name I'm forgetting, who's the head of the criminal division, the assistant attorney general for the criminal division, and Rosenstein. They all determined this is worthy of inquiry. They then have to put together an affidavit signed off by the FBI that says to a judge, "Judge, we found something which is potentially criminal, and we believe that the evidence of that criminal behavior resides in these three spaces: the attorney's office, the home, his home, and the hotel room that he was living in." And the judge has to say, "I agree. There is probable cause. I sign and issue your warrants. Go forward and execute." And that's what I think is the process here. So pretty much the system worked.
And not only did the system work, because there are so many people involved in this and so many steps involved, the president would like you to think this is some attack on the president based on his words yesterday, and that these are a bunch of, quote, Democrats gaming the system, using words like they broke in. They didn't break in. They had a warrant. They're not Democrats. As a matter of fact, politically, they're Republicans, and all the key people mentioned in this conversation are appointees by Trump or the Trump administration. There's no conspiracy here. The law appears to have been followed to a T, and that's important, Andrea.
Michael, good morning. I needed a float. How are you? I needed a flow chart, but I followed you all the way up until Jeff Sessions, and I'm just curious, at what point would he recuse himself for this? It seems to me he's walking a very thin line. Will you expect him to recuse himself from any of this?
Or I don't think he'll recuse himself from anything for the rest of his life.
Right, or only with regard to Russian meddling, and then this, again, walking such a thin line, this could lead to that indictment as well.
Well, Jeff Sessions is in a complicated position. First of all, I think it is accurate to say that when he recused himself, he did what the law required of him.
Right.
Under the law that governs recusals, you cannot work on a matter as an attorney in the Justice Department with respect to a political campaign of which you are a part. Those regulations have been in existence forever and a day, and so when the president appointed Jeff Sessions and knew that Jeff Sessions worked on his campaign, someone should have told him, if he didn't know already, that Jeff Sessions would have to recuse himself were there any investigation of his campaign. And it was known pretty early that there was going to be an investigation of the campaign, because Comey testified to that in March of that year. So he's recused from anything Russia-related, but we see that the Attorney General has stayed on in his capacity as Attorney General when it came to the firing of Mike McCabe. McCabe was the Deputy FBI Director. He seemed to have been connected somehow to the Russia investigation, yet Sessions believed that that recusal of his didn't require him to recuse himself from McCabe.
Yeah, he's tiptoeing. He's tiptoeing on a gray line here.
Right.
And so maybe he feels the same way with respect to Michael Cohen, that this is just one step removed from Russia so he could participate in it. We just don't know. But either way, whether it was Sessions or Rosenstein, I think from the standpoint of the process working, it worked fine. Except, of course, the president is quite upset about this, and you know, it's understandable in some respects, but he's mistaken when he says, as you said, Steve, that it was a break-in, illegally done by Mueller as part of a witch hunt. All of those things are just factually not correct.
And another thing I learned from you and from others last night in watching the coverage of this is just because you're an attorney and you have privilege with a client doesn't mean that any sort of criminal activity would be protected. There's something called the criminal fraud exception and taint teams that try to protect privilege as it's appropriate, but not in the case of a situation where you need evidence based on a crime and possibly having an attorney that can be destroying evidence in that case. That's what we think we know. But what I want to get to here, because I know you're pressed.
And one other thing to that, you're absolutely correct in your recitation of attorney-client privilege, that attorneys and their clients can't conspire to commit crimes and then hide the evidence of their criminality behind the attorney-client relationship. The other thing is, and this is complicated with respect to Michael Cohen, is that in order for there to be an attorney-client privilege, the attorney and the client have to be talking about legal advice. It can't be about business advice. And so Michael Cohen wears multiple hats, it seems, in the Trump organization. And if he was providing business counsel, it would be, as my advice to you, as a business matter, to take Stormy Daniels, put an end to this. That would not necessarily even fall within the attorney-client privilege, because he wasn't seeking legal advice. He was talking about business advice. So again, these are all, you know, gray areas and fine lines, but it's not clear when one says that the attorney-client relationship was pierced somehow that that's in fact factually correct.
The Republican-controlled Congress has passed on multiple opportunities to provide legal protection to the special counselor's office. That means that the president still could find a way, though it's complicated in a constitutional crisis potentially, to fire Bob Mueller. Mr. Mueller appears to be, for obvious and not so obvious reasons, about five steps ahead of the rest of us. I would assume this has all been gamed out by his office. If, in fact, I'm fired, this will happen to the evidence and the investigation we've accumulated so far. Is that true?
I would think that's correct. And if you look for precedent, you see Richard Nixon firing Archibald Cox. So Archibald Cox gets fired. Ultimately, the firing is by the Solicitor General, because the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General refused to carry out the order because they felt it was illegal. And Rosenstein, interestingly, has said the same, that he would resign rather than fire Mueller if the order was illegal. But assuming they found somebody to fire Mueller, what we saw in the Watergate case was they fired Archibald Cox, who sits in the same position as did as does Mueller now, and all that happened was a new attorney was appointed, Leon Jaworski, who carried on mostly using the staff of Archibald Cox. And so this is not a situation where if you fire the special counsel, the case goes away. It just carries on, probably with the same staff, with a new person whose name we have to figure out how to spell, whether it's Mueller or Mueller, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there it goes. And now you have to deal with, as the president, whether or not that act of firing was done with corrupt intent and will be a factor in consideration as to whether you abused your office. So it's just, from a legal standpoint, about the silliest thought process that one could go in to think that I am going to fire the special prosecutor and have it go away. We saw that with Comey. Remember, he says,
oh, sure.
The president does, I fired Comey to take pressure off me in the Russia
industry. Not so much.
That's what he said. It was actually the exact opposite. It just ratcheted up the pressure and added a whole new work stream that wouldn't have otherwise been there, which is called obstruction of justice. So hopefully cooler heads will prevail today. But, you know, I understand the president's anger about this yesterday, because he doesn't believe there's validity to this, and it's hanging around, and that's an annoyance.
We'll see you throughout the day on CNN, and we really appreciate your time and hope we can talk again.
Anytime you want. Maybe we can even do it when baseball is played in Chicago.
Listen, I've got tickets for you anytime you need them.
All righty.
Thank you.
Deal.
Michael Zeldin.